How would you like to win the Essential Lutheran Library? Books like Concordia, the Lutheran Confessions, Law and Gospel, the Lutheran Service Book, and the Lutheran Book of Prayer, and four more resources. All you have to do is share the Issues Etc. Reformation Week video on your Facebook page and send an email to contest@issuesetc.org. You'll find the video at issuesetc.org and click Support. We'll announce the winner of the Essential Lutheran Library on Friday, October 28th.
I want to thank
God is the one and only true living God, the creator of heaven and the universe. Jesus Christ is God.
I agree, Jesus Christ is the Lord. I believe in that.
Both as an American and as a Christian, I am going to stand with Israel.
Their theology, in part, is disregarding their Christian brothers and sisters. I met some of these Palestinian Christians and got to know them. They're delightful people, and they feel totally overlooked by their Christian brothers and sisters in the U.S.
Honestly, I think 30 years from now, it's the marriage redefiners who are going to look like knuckleheads.
And Derek, the tea guy from Seward, Nebraska, who drives his truck through Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, and I rock Issues, etc. the whole way.
We are often told here in the West that Islam is in many ways kind of in the Judeo-Christian ethic. It fits in there. And we're told that it really, as a worldview and as a religion, doesn't result in any different kind of a world or a view of that world than Christianity would. But is that true? When we see recent attempts on television to answer serious questions about Islam, especially with regard to human rights, and some of those serious questions just get glossed over or unanswered entirely, what are we to make of it? How do we know what Islam teaches about human rights, but in particular about women's rights? We're going to be talking about Muhammad and women's rights. Mary Jo Sharp will join us here for the first half hour or so of Issues Etc. We're coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 5th of October. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. A little bit later in this first hour, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse will join us from the Ruth Institute. We'll talk about President Obama's recent speech to the Human Rights Campaign. Also, DOMA is on the docket in the Supreme Court, just opened up its recent session. In the second hour of the program, Dr. Andrew Steinman joins us for our continuing series on biblical chronology. In astronomy, they call it standard candles. They're stars that they use to fix the distances of other stars. Well, in the Old Testament, there are two dates, fixed dates, if one does their homework, whereby we can date everything else in the Old Testament. We'll be talking about those two events, those two dates, in that part two of our weekly series with him on biblical chronology. Rick Horton joins us in the last part of the program to talk about the National League Division Series between the St. Louis Cardinals and the Philadelphia Phillies. Rick is a Cardinals broadcaster. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet @issuesetc. Mary Jo Sharp is founder of Confident Christianity Apologetics Ministry, author of an article in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal titled, Did Muhammad Believe in Women's Rights? Mary Jo, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd. It's good to be here.
You tell the story about some friends of yours who were recently traveling in Europe, and they saw an interesting ad campaign in and around London, I believe. What did they see?
Yeah, exactly. The campaign was the Inspired by Muhammad campaign, and it can be found online at inspiredbymuhammad.com. And what they saw were various posters and ads on taxi cabs and in subway stations, those sorts of things. One in particular that said, "I believe in women's rights, so did Muhammad," and it shows a picture of a woman lawyer. And if you go to the site, she actually says that considering women in Britain received the right to vote, inherit, and own property 13 centuries later, Muhammad's campaigns were both radical and revolutionary. That's the kind of image, like a positive image campaign you can see for women's rights there in the UK.
So juxtaposed against that are not only the actual texts from allegedly from Muhammad and then commentary on those texts, the holy writings of the Quran and the Hadith, but also what we see in the world today where Islam holds political sway, Mary Jo, women don't seem to fare too well, especially with in comparison to the West. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, actually, if you do some research from some of the human rights organizations, Amnesty International, the United Nations Development Fund for Women, Freedom House, these organizations that have looked into these issues specifically show you that about out of the 102 research countries, the top 10 of the top 12 are the worst, that are Muslim countries, are the worst violators of women's rights in the world. I mean, the statistics about these countries that are majority Muslim show us a very different picture from the positive image campaigns that we're seeing, not only in the UK, but like if you were to watch BBC's 2020 and hear some of the American Muslims talking about women's rights, it portrays a very different picture. We don't see women treated as equal in these countries, and in fact, we see that the violation against women violence and in their rights, it's just extremely high in these countries.
Is this just government gone wrong or Islam gone wrong, or does this have something to do with Islam itself, that is, the texts of Islam, and perhaps even with Muhammad himself?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I think that's right at the heart of the issue, is that when I hear, ABC's report, I see that it's being portrayed that this is a cultural problem. This is, men who are in control of the interpretation of the text in those countries, and so therefore they're, keeping women down, and they're the ones that are responsible for this, the men who are interpreting the text for Sharia and things like that. But then if I go and I actually look at the texts themselves, then I see a very different picture being portrayed specifically by the Quran and the Hadith and the Sirah literature, which is the life of Muhammad. And I have a hard time reconciling that it's just a cultural problem, that if, Islam were to come over and become the majority in America or in the UK, that we wouldn't again see these problems due to what I'm seeing in the text. So that is actually the issue that we need to look at. If we're going to respect Islam, if we're going to respect the people who follow Islam, we really are going to have to start digging into what their theology is and what the doctrine of women says, what their doctrines say about women. And I believe that's what we're going to get into on the show.
So let's start there. What does Islam teach in its texts about women themselves?
Okay, well, I can start, and if you feel free to jump in and interrupt wherever you want to. When I did a debate on this, I really looked at what the texts teach in the area of women in their creation, so how they were actually created, their nature, and then women in this life, what Muhammad had to say about a woman in this world, and then what he had to say about women in the afterlife. So I really want to look at the three different sections there in order to understand where what Islam teaches. So first I want to look at the nature of a human being that is female. And in creating men and women, Allah actually made a man superior to a woman. She's ontologically inferior. She is inferior in her essence, in her being. And that comes from the Quran in Surah 4:34, Surah being a chapter. Surah 4:34 says that men are in charge of women because Allah hath made one of them to excel the other. And then also in the Quran in Surah 2:228, we can read that, and men are a degree above them, being women, and that Allah is mighty and wise on this. Now, interpreting that passage in the Tafsir Ibn Kathir, this is how that has been explained by trusted Muslim commentators, which is because Allah has made one of them to excel the other means because men are superior to women and a man is better than a woman, that no nation would ever prosper that appoints a leader, a woman as their leader. That's why prophets are only women in Islam. So the commentary makes clear that the purpose of these passages is to show that women are actually created inferior. And I think we're going to see a theme of this throughout the text as we go into her life. You want me to keep on?
Well, how important is that? I mean, that at the very outset, if nothing else were taught in any of the holy writings of Islam, that it is taught that women are essentially inferior to men. That seems pretty foundational to how then, with respect to every other question about the relationship between men and women, how a devout Muslim is going to understand that relationship.
Right. I mean, it doesn't mean that a man wouldn't love his wife or that, you know, she isn't a person deserving of love or something like that, but it does show that it would philosophically outwork in the ways of it, the way it is outworking in the Middle East, and where we see that she's not in positions of leadership, she's not entrusted until very recently with voting rights, things like that, driving a car in Saudi Arabia. She has to ask the man if she's going to leave the house. These sorts of things, the outworking of the fact that she's inferior to him and he is to be in control. And from those two passages, it would be really hard to establish that real well, but that's why we need to look at the other areas of a woman's life and see further what Allah has said about a woman.
Mary Jo Sharp is our guest. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with her live this Wednesday, October the 5th, on Muhammad and women's rights. She's founder of Confident Christianity Apologetics Ministry, author of an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled, Did Muhammad Believe in Women's Rights? You can join us with questions or comments, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us a tweet at IssuesETC or an email right here in the studio with a question or a comment, talkback@issuesetc.org. talkback@issuesetc.org. More with Mary Jo Sharp on women's rights in Islam right after this.
This is Kate in Japan, and I'm commenting on the program you had about the Unification Church.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
The most important point is to say I love your show and thank you for doing what you do. Bye from Japan.
Old theology, new technology, Issues Etc. worldwide. Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. Issues Etc. IssuesETC.org.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/IssuesETC, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at IssuesETC. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/IssuesETC, and on Twitter at IssuesETC. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/IssuesETC, and on Twitter at IssuesETC.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Y'all been hearing about Country Bob's all-purpose sauce and how it tastes great on any and everything you may be cooking and serving at your family dinner table. Well, over the years, I've discovered that Country Bob's is much more than that. You see, Country Bob's is that secret ingredient in many of my recipes, whether it be for chili soups or stews or that favorite marinade for the select meat of the day we're grilling. If you're interested in discovering the secret, log on to countrybobs.com and check out their blog, exchange recipes, or buy yourself a Country Bob's cookbook and become part of the Country Bob's family. And remember, it all comes down to the sauce.
How would you like to win the Essential Lutheran Library? Books like Concordia, the Lutheran Confessions, Law and Gospel, the Lutheran Service Book, and the Lutheran Book of Prayer, and four more resources. All you have to do is share the Issues Etc. Reformation Week video on your Facebook page and send an email to contest@issuesetc.org. You'll find the video at issuesetc.org and click support. We'll announce the winner of the Essential Lutheran Library on Friday, October 28th.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Wednesday, October the 5th. Mary Jo Sharp is our guest, founder of Confident Christianity Apologetics Ministry. We're talking about Muhammad and women's rights. You say that one of the ways this lower view of women manifests itself is in regard to how women's intellect is is compared to that of a man. Where do we go in the writings of the Quran and elsewhere to find this?
Yeah, that's a great point. In the Quran, in chapter 2, Surah 282, there's this interesting section on how God is once fixed debt contracts witnessed. And what the passage actually says is if the party liable is mentally deficient or weak or unable himself to dictate, let his guardian dictate faithfully, and here's the part that we need to pay attention to, and get two witnesses out of your own men. And if there are not two men, then a man and two women, such as you choose for witnesses, so that if one of them errs, referring to the women, the other can remind her. And what's interesting about this passage is that, you know, on the surface you might say, well, that doesn't seem too bad, you know, just get two women for one man. But when you look at what Muhammad himself described about this in the Hadith in Sahih Muslim, one of the most trusted collections of Hadith, Muhammad said about this passage, he was asked, let me read it to you, that he said the women lack common sense and they are ungrateful. Cursed that they would be a majority in hell. Boy, I'm getting ahead of myself there, Todd. First of all, Muhammad says that he had a vision of hell, and he said that in that vision of hell, he saw that it was a majority women down there. And so a woman, he calls her a wise woman, asked him, you know, why are women a majority in hell? And that sounds pretty bad. So Muhammad says to her, well, this is why, because women lack common sense, they're ungrateful, they curse too much, they're deficient in faith. And the woman, upon hearing this, says, what's wrong with our common sense and with our religion? And Muhammad actually refers back to Surah 282 to answer that, and he says, your lack of common sense can well be judged from the fact that the evidence of two women is equal to one man. That is a proof of the lack of common sense. And what's so bad about this is that it means that she's created intellectually inferior, and therefore that's one of the reasons why she ends up majority in hell.
So this also explains why we find, and they're just tragic stories of the court system and the criminal system in Muslim-majority countries where women sometimes are punished for crimes committed against them or are unable to have their testimony heard in local or municipal courts because there are so many men who can come and witness against them. It sounds like they are at a permanent and pretty much impossible disadvantage there.
Yeah, that's what I see as well. And that's why I think we see that attempt to reconcile the view of women in Islam with Western ideology that's based in, you know, really Christian views of women or in Judeo-Christian values in general. But I don't see how it's reconcilable. And we've just skimmed the surface. I mean, we haven't even gone into why a man is supposed to beat a woman. We haven't gone into any of the other issues about women in this life. So, very, very important that I don't see how it's going to be able to be reconciled with Western ideology.
Let's talk about that issue of abuse. We would call it abuse. I don't know if it would be regarded as abuse. It seems like it's regarded as kind of the way a husband might treat his wife. Tell us about what's taught there.
Yeah, the passage is from the Quran, Surah 434. A lot of people are actually sort of familiar with this idea that a Muslim man can beat his wife. That's kind of how we say it in America, and if we've heard about it, that's what we've usually heard. Let me read the passage for you. It's from the chapter on women, Surah 434. As for those from whom ye fear rebellion, admonish them, banish them to beds apart, and scourge them. Then if they obey you, seek not a way against them. That's an older version. The more modern translation of Yusuf Ali puts them in order with a little commentary that you would admonish her first, then you would separate from her, beds apart, meaning do not have sexual relationships with her next. And then he puts, lastly, you are to beat her. And Yusuf Ali adds a little lightly in there. That's an interesting setup because what it looks like is going on is the order of discipline. So it tells you not only that is a man in charge of discipline, being a discipliner of the woman, it kind of establishes like a parent-to-child relationship. It also says the order of discipline, and if you notice, it got worse. So whereas Muslims today are saying, no, you don't beat her, you know, you don't hit her hard, one of the things that's important for us to remember, that's the last action you're supposed to take. It's the final step, and it's supposed to be worse than abstaining from sex with her. So, you know, lightly tapping her doesn't seem to logically follow. It doesn't do anything about the philosophical problem of one is a discipliner and the other is the discipline, like parent to child or like a human to an animal kind of situation. And worse yet is if you get out of the Quran and you go to Muhammad's interpretation of this in Sahih al-Bukhari, another trusted collection of hadith, we hear of the beating of a woman from Muhammad's wife, Aisha. And when Aisha brings this woman to Muhammad, she actually says, I have not seen any women suffering as much as the believing women, talking about the Muslims. And she points to the woman, says, look, her skin is greener, and then quotes bruised, than her clothes. And then when I brought this passage up about, you know, hey, here's this woman that's been beaten greener than her clothing, my Muslim debater's response was, yes, but that woman was a liar. That woman, basically what she was saying is the woman deserved it. She deserved to be beaten under the teachings of Islam because she lied. Therefore, the man was justified. I have heard Muslims bring up another passage from Sunan Abu Dawud, a collection of hadith, in which they say, you know what, Allah said Muhammad's handmaidens would not be beaten. They're not to be beaten. But what we need to do is keep reading in the same passage in Sunan Abu Dawud. They're talking about 2141, and in 2141, Muhammad says, women have become emboldened towards their husbands, so the Prophet gave permission to beat them. And if this is not clear enough, the very next line says, the Prophet said, a man will not be asked as to why he beat his wife. Now, you're going to establish law based on this text. That's not going to work out good for the woman in any circumstance.
Let's talk about the way this inferiority of women plays itself out with regard to the sexual relationship. What do we need to know there?
In a sexual relationship, a man in Islam can have many partners. He has obviously his wives, and he can have up to four wives. This is established in Surah 424, and also, I'm sorry, in 4:3. That's where it's found. And then a man can have female captives as well as multiple wives. And the female captives, that's Surah 424. What is particularly interesting about that is true today. A Muslim man can have a woman as a sex slave today in our modern society. And this actually has happened in America, a Saudi Arabian man. And I'm going to pronounce his name horribly, and I apologize for that. His name is Humaydin Ali Al-Turki. He actually was convicted in 2005 and arrested in the state of Colorado for having a female captive with whom he was, according to American law, was raping. But according to him, in his defense trial, he said, Your Honor, I'm not here to apologize, for I cannot apologize for things I did not do and for crimes I did not commit. The state has criminalized these basic Muslim behaviors. Attacking traditional Muslim behaviors was the focal point of the prosecution. And he's referencing this female captive with whom he was having sex with against her will. The passages in the Quran that establish more so of this would be Surah 2:223, in which wives are said to be a tilth for you, which is a crop that you would plow, you know, in order to produce good crops. Your wives are a tilth for you, so go to your tilth when or how you will. And the response to this was that, well, that's just taking care of the woman. That's making sure that she's well attended to in sexual relationships. But Muhammad, when he commented on this passage, he said, by in whose hand is my life? When a man calls his wife to bed and she does not respond, the one who is in heaven is displeased with her until he, that's her husband, is pleased with her. and that's Sahih Muslim 3366. The next hadith following that one says that not only is the husband displeased with her, but the angels curse her until dawn. That's quite a statement. I believe it also plays into why she is not. She can also be not called into heaven if she has not pleased her husband, and that's from Al-Tirmidhi.
Let's take a break. When we come back, a few more minutes with Mary Jo Sharp. We're talking about Muhammad on women's rights. It's Wednesday afternoon, October the 5th. Mary Jo is founder of Confident Christianity Apologetics Ministry, author of an article in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Did Muhammad believe in women's rights? Well, it appears not so much. When we come back, we'll talk about the veil, which is a much controverted subject in countries that are increasing their Muslim population. Is it just a form or a symbol of modesty, or is there something more to the Islamic veiling of women than simply trying to protect women in an immodest society? We'll be right back.
If your travels bring you to Northwest Indiana, the Saints of Heritage Lutheran Church in Valparaiso invite you to join us for a Christ-centered, cross-focused divine service at 9 a.m. on Sunday morning. For more information about visiting Heritage, please contact Pastor Joseph Ostafinski by calling 219-464-2810 or sending an email to heritagelc@frontier.com. You can also visit us on the web at www.heritage-lcms.org.
Just in time for Reformation Day, Concordia Publishing House has a new graphic novel titled Luther, Echoes of the Hammer. This Luther biography is written and illustrated in a fun, comfortable format. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Or you can purchase Luther, Echoes of the Hammer by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. This new Reformation resource costs $12.99 plus shipping and handling. Luther, Echoes of the Hammer, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Up to 40% of premature births are caused when a woman's water breaks. It's the rupture of the membrane around the unborn baby, and birth soon follows. But now researchers are working on a patch for the membrane to keep the baby inside the womb until ready to be born. It's made with adult stem cells taken from placentas of babies already born. The repair is made by doctors using keyhole surgery. They say this patch is tough, and they're confident it'll hold to keep the baby in the womb. This apparent breakthrough is especially meaningful because non-embryonic stem cells are being used to help save unborn babies. Somebody needs to tell President Obama, who continues to promote embryonic stem cell research that kills embryonic human beings. Let's choose life.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. A few more minutes on Muhammad and women's rights with Mary Jo Sharp. Then Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morris will join us from the Ruth Institute. We'll talk about two issues. President Obama recently made a speech to the Human Rights Campaign talking about his record on homosexual rights. And the Supreme Court is taking up the issue of the Defense of Marriage Act, which the Obama administration has decided officially not to defend. It's under fire. We'll see what Jennifer thinks about that coming up in just a few minutes here on Issues Etc. Let's talk about that veil that is so controversial where Islam has political sway. Is it just a symbol of modesty? Is it a way of only a way of protecting women in an immodest society, Mary Jo?
That's a great question. And I believe that if you were to ask a Muslim woman, as with everything we're talking about today, you should really ask a Muslim what they've been taught and what they believe, because just like with Christians, they don't always study all of these issues and they haven't gotten to all of these things. So it's really important to ask them. But I think one of the responses that you would get here in America specifically, and possibly in the UK, is that the veil is just a personal choice of piety. And I do not actually see that in the Muslim text when I'm studying what is said there. In fact, I'm seeing it more as a command of God that a woman should veil. And it is for the purpose of keeping her safe, to not be molested by men or not troubled by men. I'll read the passage from the Quran. It's from 33:59 that says, "O Prophet, tell thy wives and daughters and the believing women that they should cast their outer garments over their persons, that it is most convenient that they should be known as such and not molested." God commanded the Prophet here to cover his wives, his daughters, and the Muslim women, the believing women is what the passage says. And the reason was so as not to be, like it said, molested. Other translations use hurt or offended, insulted, given trouble. So it's a very different picture. The veil is not just for piety. It's so that you won't actually be bothered by other people, specifically by men. And another passage in the Quran, Surah 24:31, says that women should lower their gaze and guard their modesty, that they should not display their beauty and ornaments except what must be ordinarily appear, that they should draw their veils over their bosoms and not display their beauty, except in the presence, and then it goes through a list of certain people. So when you combine those two passages, the command to wear the veil becomes more understandable. It's to cover their bodies from those who may be sexually attracted to them, to molest or annoy them, but also it's in order to distinguish wives and to distinguish respectable people. In fact, Muhammad actually ordered the veiling of his own wives to distinguish them from lady slaves. And you can see that. You can find that in Sahih al-Bukhari 42:13 and 50:85. He actually distinguished in those passages between his regular Muslim wives and his slaves that he was sleeping with, having sex with, by the veil. And that's an important distinction that I think a Muslim woman should talk about. Is that, you know, are you doing this out of a desire just to please God that you think it's just modest, or is there actually a command there, and what is insinuated if you don't wear the veil? Is it insinuated that you're not a pious lover of God? Is it insinuated that you're like one of these lady slaves? We don't have anything like that in the Christian faith where we have modesty. Definitely we have modesty, but we don't have this garment will make you appear as a pious person versus this garment makes you appear as not a pious person. And you obviously see that in Islam. It's very clearly laid out. So I'm very interested in the discussion with Muslim women on, you know, what is your view of the veil and where specifically are you locating that in Muslim texts?
With only about a minute here, finally, what does that say about the expectations of men's behavior if it is commanded that women be veiled in public, lest, I mean, it sounds like Muhammad expects men to essentially act like, you know, teenage boys all the time if a woman isn't completely covered up. About a minute for your response, Mary Jo.
Okay, well, yeah, I think it doesn't deal with what Jesus said about the heart of a person, the motives, that it is from the heart that these actions come out, as he said in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5. It really doesn't quite treat what's going on in the heart. The problem is lust. The problem is the desires of the flesh. And those really need to be treated. And they are treated in the Christian faith, but you don't see that in Islam. What you see is a covering up. Hopefully, it's like a superficial dealing with the real philosophical problem, which is the nature of a man or of a woman, in both. So what you find is that it doesn't actually get to the desires of the heart and the motives. It just kind of glosses over them. And I think that's a real issue that should be discussed between Christianity and Islam.
Mary Jo Sharp is founder of Confident Christianity Apologetics Ministry. She's author of an article in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal titled, "Did Muhammad Believe in Women's Rights?" You'll find a link to Confident Christianity Apologetics Ministry at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Mary Jo, thanks for being our guest.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.